Hello and welcome to Away, Indigenous Culture on ABC Radio National. I'm Daniel Browning, thanks for your company. Today we replay a documentary about the solitary life and extraordinary career of Anthony Martin Fernando, one of the first Aboriginal political activists. At a time in our history when Aboriginal people were being confined to reserves and missions, Fernando was blazing a trail overseas. He travelled across Europe, from London to Germany, from Switzerland to Italy. On his sometimes wandering journey, he left evidence, bits and pieces of an activist life that we're only now putting together. As you'll hear, Fernando's story is an unlikely one. As a British subject, he was interned in Austria during the First World War, while in the 1920s he unsuccessfully petitioned the Pope and was accused by Australian authorities of being a German spy. Fernando told anyone who cared to listen that his people were being exterminated and that the toy skeletons he made and sold on the streets of London were all that Australia had left of his people. I hope you enjoy Fernando's Ghost.
I had a bitter education in white brutality.
Fernando declared that he had seen whites go unpunished for murdering and ill-treating Aborigines. He paraded London with a banner, accusing them of these methods.
Anthony Martin Fernando was one of those great heroes that basically we're unaware of.
It's also a poignant and moving story, and it's as much about trauma and loss and, I guess, despair, as well as determination.
We are despised and rejected, but it is the black people who keep this country in all its greatness.
All of us really thought in very local terms about Aboriginal politics. It was pretty surprising to see Aboriginal political activists in the 1920s and 30s who knew about things in other states and in New Zealand. But the idea that there was an Aboriginal activist in London, and in fact this little story made it clear that he'd been in Italy as well, in the 1920s and the 1930s was really a shock. It was a real surprise.
The mission system is corrupt and was never meant to cultivate the primitive mind with a view to noble thoughts and high aspirations, or manly dignity and womanly virtue. It is only another kind of state prison and the murder houses of the lords and ladies of Australasia.
Anthony Martin Fernando's story is little known, but a growing mythology surrounds him. He was politically active at a time in our history when few Aboriginal people were. What little we know of his life can be gleaned from archival fragments, Swiss newspapers, British court transcripts, and Australian government surveillance reports. He delivered his message across Europe on foot in the 1920s. He settled in London, where he appeared in court twice. But far from being intimidated into silence, he used British courts of law as a political stage to criticise the way Australia treated its Indigenous people. He believed he was on a God-sent mission.
Charges against man of colour, street trader and a loaded revolver. Anthony Martin Fernando, a man of colour, who is a street trader, with an address at Warner Street, Holborn, was charged on remand at Old Street Police Court yesterday with presenting a loaded revolver at Philip Limber, another street trader, with intent to do him grievous bodily harm. The prisoner was described at an earlier hearing as an Australian Aborigine. Mr. Knight, prosecuting, said that Limber was at his stall in Bethnal Green Road when Fernando passed with a tray of toy birds, and he made a joking remark to him. Limber said that as Fernando passed his stall, he said to him, "Good morning, darkie," and laughed. Cross-examined by Sir John Cameron for the defence, Limber denied that he'd said to Fernando, "Wash your black face," and then made a rude remark about him. Fernando, who pleaded not guilty and reserved his defence, was committed for trial.
Sydney Morning Herald. February the 2nd, 1929. Aborigines story in London Court. Persecution of blacks. Anthony Martin Fernando, an Aboriginal toy hawker, born near Sydney, was remanded for a month at the Old Bailey to ascertain what could be done for him. Addressing the court in fluent English, he said, "I have been boycotted everywhere. Look at my rags.
I have been boycotted everywhere.
I cannot make ends meet.
Look at my rags. I cannot make ends meet. All I hear is, go away, black man. It is all tommy rot to say we are savages. Whites have shot, slowly starved, or hanged us."
I'm Fiona Paisley, and I'm a historian at Griffith University in Brisbane, and I've been working on a book about Anthony Martin Fernando. I think I've lost the initial reaction that I had to his story, which was really a combination of excitement at such an extraordinary life and respect for this individual and also fascination in his story. I mean, it's a very impressive and powerful but also poignant story. So, you know, impressive in that we have a very resilient individual who survived against the odds and was determined to speak out. He was a man who found living in Australia increasingly impossible in the second half of the 19th century, and who then decided the only future was to in fact live overseas and to continue to protest while overseas.
Anthony Fernando always identified as Aboriginal through his mother, but there's some debate about where his father came from. His surname, which is shared by a very big Aboriginal family from northwestern New South Wales, might be a clue. Heather Goodall, Professor of History at the University of Technology, Sydney, has been researching the South Indian seamen who came to Australia in large numbers. She believes Fernando's father may have been one of them.
In the Indian Ocean particularly, Indian crews were the major part of the way that whole shipping transport set of lines ran, not just for the British but for the Dutch and the French imperial networks. So we had thousands of Indian seafarers who were the deckhands and the engine men and in some cases the saloon attendants on these shipping lines through Australian ports every year. There were something like 20-30% of the crews of British ships were Indian. And so the possibility that Indian seafarers would leave the ships and move into the Australian population was actually very high. We just hadn't realised it. Because they often moved in illegally, there aren't good records about their presence. But we find them because those of them who married into the Aboriginal community have left records with their families, sometimes just their name.
It may well be that his father was a Sri Lankan or Goanese man who was in Australia in the 1850s, 1860s. Fernando was born in the 1860s. In a way, we're talking about his own political and personal inheritance, if you like. We're trying to work out who his father is. But perhaps a better way to be thinking is where his sense of identity comes from. And as he makes clear throughout his life, it comes from an Aboriginal identity. We know that he was removed as a child. He doesn't speak about his father at all, and he does talk about, however, spending his earliest years with a white family. He accuses them of treating him as little more than a puppy, as though he were a pet, and denying him the rights to education. So this was one of his other major campaigns, is the right to education, is the right to understanding oneself in the world and one's own labour.
"I had a bitter education in white brutality. I was taken from my tribe before I was old enough to remember my mother, but the thought of her has been the guiding star of my life. People trained dogs, but I was not taught anything.
He could have been taken in a raid on an Aboriginal community, and certainly we have massacre histories that include the stealing of children. It was a favourite thing to bring back a little boy or a little girl for the homestead, the mistress of the homestead, to keep supposedly like a member of the family, to sort of add tragedy, further tragedy to this experience, and the horror for him of, in a way, coming into awareness in the arms possibly of the people who had murdered his mother or his family, or certainly had separated him from her. By the time he leaves them, whether he escaped or whether he became a worker in the homestead himself and moved on, by the time he returns to his own people or his own country, his mother has passed on. And she becomes the, as he's quoted as saying, the guiding star of his life. So she becomes the symbol of his struggle for justice.
While researching Fernando's life, Fiona Paisley found evidence that he was living in Western Australia in the first few years of the 20th century. He wrote a letter to the then Chief Protector of Aborigines, complaining about the way he believed that Aboriginal people were being treated at the mission at New Norcia, which was established by Spanish Benedictine monks in the 1860s. At the time, it was held up as a model settlement, where Aboriginal people were being taught agriculture so that they might become yeoman farmers.
We have this letter from Peak Hill in 1903, where he writes to the Chief Protector of the Aborigines in Western Australia, Henry Prinsep. By the time Fernando writes, he's clearly outraged that New Norcia is still being referred to as a great example of the best.
I have not detected any reform made towards these starving and disgraced, but have seen much more grievances practiced with a vengeance. New Norcia is nothing but a money-making enterprise and a far worse slavery system than ever the American system was. It is only another kind of strategy to waylay the champagne-drinking featherbed class of inquirers.
And he writes a long letter where he takes Prinsep to task for this, and he argues that going and talking to people in New Norcia would reveal the truth if that were only to be done. And of course, as an Indigenous person, he claims that he's much better able to talk to the Indigenous inmates.
The mission system is corrupt and was never meant to cultivate the primitive mind with a view to noble thoughts and high aspirations, or manly dignity and womanly virtue. It is only another kind of state prison and the murder houses of the lords and ladies of Australasia.
Again, we have a sense of him making a last-ditch effort to actually appeal to authorities. Now, it seems that Prinsep didn't reply to him. There is a note on the file where Prinsep says, you know, who is this, you know, strange person writing this strange letter?
Until the 1870s, the testimony of Aboriginal people was not admissible in the courts. It was believed that their evidence couldn't be trusted. But even senior government officials saw that this was unfair and that it discriminated against Aboriginal people in cases where they were the victims of crimes perpetrated by whites.
Lord Stanley to Sir George Gipps. It is indispensable to the protection of the natives that their evidence should be received in courts of law. Chief Protector Hercules Robinson, the destruction of the Aboriginals has been accelerated from the known fact of their being incapacitated to give evidence in our courts of law. They complain of being made to suffer the higher penalties of the law when deprived of its benefits.
I have seen whites in Australia go unpunished for murdering and ill-treating Aborigines.
In later life, he argued that it was the fact that he'd been excluded from giving evidence in a courtroom where a white man had been accused of murdering some Aboriginal people, so that it was, in fact, the failure of British justice the failure of him being able to access his right to give evidence in a court that was the final straw for him. That meant that there really was no possibility for improving or reforming settler colonialism in Australia from within the nation itself. The only way to do that would be to appeal to an international public.
I am a British subject of Australia. Because of hostile legislation towards the coloured races, I was obliged to eke out my living in other lands since 1890.
He left this country in the late 19th century, and from my understanding, he gained work as a boilerman on a ship and finished up in Europe. Survived the First World War, which was, you know, an incredible time of turmoil in the world. And he turned up in Europe and was campaigning on behalf of Aboriginal people and issues in the early 1920s.
Professor John Maynard from the University of Newcastle has written extensively on the history of Aboriginal political activism in the first part of the 20th century. Anthony Fernando left Australia in the 1900s, frustrated by the racist policies of the time. After finding his way to Europe, he was held in a prisoner of war camp in Austria. After that, we find him living in Italy.
Sydney Morning Herald, February the 2nd, 1929. Fernando, after working for English barristers, became involved with the fascist government in 1923. Owing to his distribution of pamphlets in Italy, alleging that the British government was systematically exterminating Australian Aborigines.
He was in a really interesting position of being in a country which wasn't Britain. That's the other thing. We were all limited to thinking Australia, Britain, if we thought about colonialism. But Anthony Martin Fernando had the astute political judgment as well as the good fortune to be in Italy. And so he was able to use the difference between Italy and the degree of distance from the British Empire to critique what the British were doing. And he had an audience there. And Mussolini in the early 30s, who was at that stage an ally of Britain, deported Fernando to Britain.
Writing a history of Fernando is really about putting clues together. It's like a jigsaw puzzle with the majority of the pieces missing. I mean, this isn't about a biography where it's, you know, everything's kind of all the loose ends are tied up. This is very much about an extraordinary series of moments where this individual appears in the archives and then, in a sense, disappears again. And we can kind of patch those stories together. And oddly enough, when you think about it, one of the key documents to opening up more research on his life is an Australian government surveillance report, a confidential report. And in that, there's some hearsay evidence, as you know, all these surveillance reports rely on, but also a number of leads and a number of statements about his life that have helped to open up and have provided a way forward in doing some new work on his extraordinary career overseas.
Received October 19, 1921. Confidential and secret. Attorney General's Department, Investigation Branch. Mr. Anthony Martin Fernando, an Australian native, has recently left Bern for Germany. This man appears to be engaged in anti-British propaganda, especially as concerns England's brutal treatment of the Australian blacks, and advocates the creation of reserves or refuge territory for the black race in Australia, similar to those allotted to Indians by the government of the USA. Fernando seems to be actuated less by a concern for the natives than by a desire to do England harm.
A cry for help from Australia. An Australian Aborigine, Mr. Anthony Martin Fernando, came to our editorial offices last Friday with an urgent request. He is an extraordinarily articulate man and is quite overcome at the imminent final destruction of the Aborigines. Wherever the railway goes, he says, it will be the end of us. Fernando's idea is that the Indigenous people should be allocated their own territory in the hottest part of the country, in the north of Australia, and this territory placed under the mandate of a neutral power. Mr. Fernando is thinking here primarily of Switzerland or Holland. The mandated power would have to account to Great Britain for its stewardship.
Yes, 1921, he walked into the offices of Der Bund, a progressive newspaper, and engaged the editors in a long conversation about policies towards Indigenous people around the world.
Alcohol-free restaurant, Bern, 25th June 1921. To the editor of Der Bund, Bern. Dear sir, I am not an educated man and ask that you make allowances for my defective grammar and spelling. In the name of humanity, I implore you to use all the means at your disposal to assist the mission with which God has entrusted me. In order that all educated readers of your newspaper understand what is happening to Australia's Indigenous people under British rule and administration. The Aborigines of Australia are being exterminated with extreme heartlessness under British authority. Some are being shot. Others who escape this fate meet their deaths through hunger, poisoned food, the stealing of their children, and sexually transmitted diseases. If they refuse to submit to the will of the ruling English despots or are late in completing their work...
In view of articles he has written in the newspaper Der Bund of Bern, the man appears not only anti-British but pro-German, and it is suggested that he is employed by the Germans.
They know about him being interviewed in Switzerland, so his story about him is published in the Swiss press. It's in German. There's a great deal of concern about Germany at this time, so and one of the key aspects of the surveillance report is the idea that he's actually working secretly for the Germans, that he's supporting Germany in the post-World War I era.
Those who rule the land and call themselves Australians are indeed nothing more than the descendants of the convicts sent over from England and other vagabonds and adventurers. There is no primitive Indigenous people in the history of the world which has the intellectual individuality of the Australian Aborigines. But despite this, the British say that they cannot be tamed. The lion, the tiger, and other carnivores and poisonous reptiles can be trained according to the will of man. But the British government has succeeded until now in shamelessly throwing sand in the eyes of all critical researchers, in collaboration with their accomplices in cruelty, the missionaries and the Commission of Protection, and has persuaded people that Aborigines are not capable of culture. It is as unusual to see a black man in any Australian city as it is in Switzerland. Yet Australia is by nature the black man's land. Should the English be allowed to continue with their plans and expand them? Therefore, I beg and beseech you to call on all humanity through the voice of the Swiss people and through them the rest of the thinking world to take deliberate steps to establish a commission of inquiry which will investigate British rule over the Aborigines and wipe it from the face of the earth.
On leaving Bern, Fernando is stated to have interviewed certain members of the League of Nations in Geneva, and thereafter to have gone to Berlin. It is understood that on his return from Berlin, he intends to resume his conversations with the League of Nations. He is said to possess an American passport. He seems to have arrived in Switzerland from Italy, where he is said to have been in close touch with certain church dignitaries, and to have addressed a private petition to the Pope.
He also, as a Catholic, made an effort to appeal to the Vatican, but was unable. He didn't have a letter of introduction, he said. And then from there, in a sense, European internationalism not really providing him with a foothold. He then appears next in England, perhaps at his most dramatic, where he demonstrates outside the front of Australia House.
Fernando, Anthony Martin. With reference to your memorandum 21/2/1575 of the 18th of October, asking for any information regarding the above-named that may be available, I have to inform you that inquiries have failed to show any trace of him. The Chief Inspector of Aborigines has no knowledge of any person of the name or corresponding with the description of Fernando.
Now, the next time, this next flash when Fernando leaps back into public consciousness is 1929, when his appearance at the Old Bailey is reported in the Times and back here in Australia in the Sydney Morning Herald.
Yes, it appears that at that time Fernando was working as a street trader, a toy seller in London, among no doubt a whole variety of street traders from elsewhere. And here he is with his own stall in a street market. Two stalls away from his, there's a white man who taunts him. There's racial abuse. There's a bit of a scuffle, and during that scuffle, Fernando produces a gun.
When brought back by a police officer, he took a fully loaded revolver from his pocket and pointed it at Limber's face. But the policeman caught his hand and threw him down. It looked as though he had every intention of firing it in the man's face. Fernando, who pleaded not guilty and reserved his defence, was committed for trial.
Now, there are policemen nearby, so I think we can see it as very much a sort of performative protest moment, the drawing of the gun. It's hardly done under cover of the shadows. I mean, he's clearly seen by the police, who immediately arrest him and take the gun away. The gun was loaded, although apparently the bullets were the wrong type for the gun, so it would never have fired. By this time, he's in later middle age, in his 50s, and then the second time he's in court for the same thing, 10 years later, 1938, he's in his mid-60s. So he's an older man now, finding that racism on the streets. We know that there were riots, particularly after the First World War, where white servicemen came back to reclaim jobs that had been, in the meantime, taken up by various non-white populations, especially in the port cities, the sailors when they were staying on land in between voyages. So there was a degree of violence on the streets, and Fernando's very clear about that when he stands up in court at the Old Bailey. You know, he says, look at me, here I am in rags.
I have been boycotted everywhere. Look at my rags. I cannot make ends meet. All I hear is, go away, black man. It is all tommy rot to say we are savages. Whites have shot, slowly starved, or hanged us.
Aborigines story in London court. Persecution of blacks. Anthony Martin Fernando, an Aboriginal toy hawker, born near Sydney, was remanded for a month at the Old Bailey to ascertain what could be done for him. Sir Ernest Wilde, after hearing the evidence of barristers about the man's good character, declined to imprison him on a charge of presenting a revolver at Philip Limber with intent to do bodily harm.
Here we can agree with the judge in his case that we need to think about the individual and his motives. So here we have someone, in that sense, forced to arm himself, who actually really fears for his life. So it's not just having a gun to wave at someone, it's potentially that he would be in a situation where he felt he might have to defend his life.
Sir Ernest Wilde said that it was very provoking of anyone to call attention to Fernando's colour. He asked two barristers, who satisfactorily employed the man, to arrange to assist him.
This is Away, and you're on ABC Radio National. And today, Fernando's ghost,
a program I made 3 years ago about the Aboriginal rights activist Anthony Martin Fernando. Fernando's activism eventually led him to the steps of Australia House, the seat of the Australian government in Britain. It was on the corner of this imposing building in central London that he acted out a haunting form of street protest.